listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the Hollywood 2022 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair Part A. Here's the editor's letter from Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief. In the photos, Idris Elba, Kristen Stewart, Michaela J. Rodriguez, Benedict Cumberbatch, Simu Liu, Penelope Cruz, Andrew Garfield, and Nicole Kidman each grace Vanity Fair's Hollywood cover. Photographs by Maurizio Catalan and Pierpaolo Ferrari. To mark the occasion of our 28th annual Hollywood issue, we present the iconic Hollywood cover, Times 8. Scenes real and imagined from the gravitational center of movie-making, conjuring fantasies of stardom with a wink. Behind the camera, for the second year in a row, are conceptual artists Maurizio Catalan and Pierpaolo Ferrari. The talent in front of their lens hardly needs introduction. Nicole Kidman ushers us inside the gates of Hollywood. Kristen Stewart lounges above the L.A. skyline. Idris Elba unites car culture and pool cool in one perfect frame. Our cover stars are on top of their worlds. Every one of these actors is having a hell of a year, bridging art house films and epic franchises, studios and streamers, small screen and big screen. In a series of interviews conducted by Vanity Fair's own Delia Kai, David Canfield, Cassie DaCosta, Johanna Desta, Rebecca Ford, Julie Miller, and Chris Murphy, they speak of the joys and challenges of their craft, the state of the industry, and their hopes for what lies ahead. Elsewhere in the issue, Vanity Fair pulls back the curtain on cinematic stories of ambition, scandal, and tragedy. Gabriel Sherman interviews Jerry Falwell Jr. about his precipitous fall from grace. Part biblical parable, Enter the Prodigal Son, part Coen Brothers-esque farce, Enter the Pool Boy. Anthony Bresnahan investigates the series of failures in judgment, accountability, protocol that led to the death of cinematographer Helena Hutchins on the set of Alec Baldwin's movie Rust. And Anthony, along with Joanna Robinson, reports on Amazon Studios' The Rings of Power, based on material by J.R.R. Tolkien, probably the most anticipated series of this decade, and shaping up to be the most expensive television series ever made. Pack your bags and sharpen your Elvish. Back to Middle-earth we go. Thank you. Now for the issue's contributors. In January, Vanity Fair brought technicolor and joy to a gloomy winter weekend by taking over Los Angeles's sprawling Smashbox Studios to honor some of the year's most exciting names in entertainment. Back at the helm of the magazine's 28th annual Hollywood cover and portfolio were conceptual artist Maurizio Cattelan and Pierpaolo Ferrari, and beloved stylist and editor Katie Grand. "The fashion," exclaimed Grand. "What a great season of clothes to be celebrating Hollywood. 24 trunks, more than 200 pairs of shoes, 100 gowns, and enough carats of fine jewelry to warrant a dozen jewelry guards brought the glamour this year. But everyone had an idea of how they wanted to express themselves, where they are in their lives and careers," Grand said. "It was a very exciting collaboration." Of their signature approach, Ferrari said, "to capture each actor in a single cover image, it was important to recreate the Los Angeles that we know and love. That spirit made them all part of the same moment, and then we could emphasize each character with the irony of the images. I wanted it to be completely different than previous years," said Cattelan. "After such long isolation, we wanted to celebrate a city that holds such history, energy, and color. Creativity is always driven by the talent, and we are part of a chain that celebrates this incredible industry." Nicole Kidman already has 10 covers with Vanity Fair, and yet she was as collaborative and open as a newcomer. "It was a great lesson of humbleness and professionalism." In the photographs by Roger Kisby, Pierpaolo Ferrari and Benedict Cumberbatch discuss a cover shot. Michaela J. Rodriguez in full glam. Andrew Garfield takes off. Ferrari and Maurizio Cattelan horsing around. Kristen Stewart ready for her close-up. Simu Liu in mid-flight. A live swan vamps for the camera. a bit of mirth. Louisa Jacobson shines on the Gilded Age, HBO's sumptuous Robber Baron soap, as interviewed by Britt Hinemuth. In the photo, Louisa Jacobson photographed at the hotel on Rivington, New York City. After years charting the upstairs-downstairs drama at Downton Abbey, creator Julian Fellowes moves stateside for another glitzy period melodrama, starring Louisa Jacobson as a penniless ingenue who's thrust abruptly into Fifth Avenue society. While Jacobson says she's facing a huge learning curve in her TV debut, the youngest daughter in a family of artists, her parents are Meryl Streep and sculptor Don Gummer, her sisters are actors, her brother's a musician, is determined to do things her own way. She spent childhood summers at theater camp and did drama in high school, but upon arriving at Vassar College, she chose to bury my desire to act. I needed to prove to myself, my family, and my peers that somehow I was different. Jacobson majored in psychology with an art history minor, but still performed with friends in empty lecture halls. Upon graduation, she pursued jobs in retail and advertising and started auditioning for plays during lunch breaks. I was tired of telling myself I'm not allowed to. Then she applied to Yale Drama and got in. A huge fan of Downton Abbey, Jacobson had a Sunday ritual of watching the show with a friend, comedian Tracy Ullman. We just ordered lots of Indian food and drank red wine and ate chocolate. To prepare for the role, Jacobson wore a corset around her apartment. Peeing was really hard. I tried to sneeze and it imploded, and read Edith Wharton in era-appropriate buildings, like the New York Public Library. Her co-stars are a who's who of Broadway, Cynthia Nixon, Carrie Coon, Audra McDonald, Bill Irwin, and Christine Baranski. Her most memorable moment was filming at The Breakers, the historic Vanderbilt mansion in Newport, Rhode Island. I feel like I went back in time, all of us in our gowns, leaving the home like it must have been. Then I got into a van, and they opened the door and were like, "Can you actually get out? This is Julian's van." She admits she's a lot like her character Marion, who doesn't want her life handed to her. She wants to pave her own path. She's a person who doesn't let the shiny exterior fool her. Feed the Spirit, jazz singer and 2020 MacArthur genius, Cecile McLaurin-Salvant, shares inspirations behind her new album, Ghost Song. Food by MF Doom. Salvant calls the artist wit, humor, irreverence, creativity, casual virtuosity, and dizzying references on this 2004 album, and always a forever inspiration. Into the Inferno by Werner Herzog. The 2016 documentary is filled with images of oozing lava. I want to eat. And Herzog's memories, people fearing and drawing power from volcanoes and the myths that revolve around them. Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte. Novels about people living with different kinds of ghosts, dealing with their memories, and struggling with their ambitions, fed the album. A certain Kate Bush cover opens the track list. Here's what's trending. The Glitterati, Keep the Jewel Tones, Skip the Corset, and Make the Party, Regency-era decadent in gobs of sequins and bejeweled boots, built to shimmer under evening lights. In the photos, all hail the second season of Netflix's Bridgerton, out this month. Eventbrite, Givenchy bag, Moschino jacket, low dress, Hermes watch, Miu Miu sunglasses, Versace skirt, Barredo eyeshadow palette, Nikos Koulis ring, Dolce & Gabbana bra, Tom Ford top, Etro pants, Tom Ford sunlit rosy lip balm, Victoria Beckham lid luster and chiffon, and Alexander McQueen boots. And this from Daisy Shaw Ellis. Cult classic with photograph by Paul Kuiker. Chanel evening bags in pearl and metal. In these glossy hand-assembled evening bags, Chanel marries brand hallmarks. Pearls, cinematic gray scale, with a touch of sparkle and a deco pattern for red carpet pizzazz. Available in 3 genteel sizes. The smallest hauls a platinum card or two, while the largest is suitable for an iPhone and a crimson lipstick with a little room to spare. Enchanté, mes petites. And this from Laura Regensdorf, Cabinet Meeting. Shiny statuettes are the currency among performers this season, but the real action is on the bathroom shelves, thanks to a celebrity beauty spree. Telegenic hair gave rise to Jennifer Aniston's Lola V. Pharrell Williams' lineless skin brought us human race. You can match your nails to Harry Styles' pleasing shimmer and Halsey's About Face glitter, and smell like Tyler, the Creator, his musky rose French waltz. This collection of new launches is a slick lot, but responsible too, down to Rihanna's eco-minded refillable lipsticks, even better than an autograph. In the photos, Keys Soul Care, Let Me Glow Illuminating Serum, Pleasing Nail Polish, Lola V Perfecting Leave-In, J-Lo Beauty, That Limitless Glow Sheet Mask, Pattern Transition Mask, House Laboratories by Lady Gaga Italian Glam Highlighter Brush, Rare Beauty Warm Wishes Bronzer Stick, Undian Lacquer Nail Polish, Anomaly Bonding Treatment Mask, About Face Fractal Glitter Jelly Set, Golf Le Fleur French Waltz Fragrance, Billie Eilish Eilish Eau de Parfum, Human Race Body Bar Set, REM Beauty Highlighter Topper, Fenty Beauty Fenty Icon Lipstick. Illustration for this piece by Jaya Nicely. Moving on to the fairground, the luminaries, the Los Angeles County Museum of Art's glittering annual art and film gala honored artist Amy Sherald and Kehinde Wiley alongside filmmaker Steven Spielberg. In the photos, the Power of the Dog co-stars and real-life couple Kirsten Dunst and Jesse Plemons. Amy Sherald. Anderson .Paak congratulated Squid Game breakout star Haeyeon. House of Gucci star and longtime Alessandro Michele muse Jared Leto. Elle Fanning and Sienna Miller. Power pairs Lauren Sanchez and Jeff Bezos. François-Henri Pinault and Salma Hayek. Art and Film Gala co-host Leonardo DiCaprio swaps stories with honoree Steven Spielberg and friend Bob Iger. Tyler, the creator. Photographs by Roger Kisby, and the event was covered by Brent Hinemuth. And another party covered by Brent Hinemuth, Block Party. Gucci shut down Hollywood Boulevard from the Chinese Theater to the Dolby for a spectacular spring-summer 2022 show. In the photos, a confection courtesy of Alessandro Michele, whose mother worked in the film world as a production company assistant. Dakota Johnson and Billie Eilish. Gwyneth Paltrow revives the iconic red velvet tux she wore to the 1996 MTV Video Music Awards. Playwright Jeremy O'Harris meets superfan Diane Keaton, Miley Cyrus, and Lizzo. Giddy Up, a Los Angeles eatery revives old Hollywood charm by Gabe Ola. In the photos, Casper's Room at Horses. Chefs and co-owners Liz Johnson and Will Agatanian, avocado crostino with Cantabrian anchovies. The cheeseburger. Everybody in L.A. seems to be placing bets on Horses, a new Sunset Boulevard restaurant, committed to a deeper nostalgia than mere pre-pandemic festivity, harking back to the city's golden age. Any given night, locals pack the bar and booths in the tavern, dubbed the Drinkery. Food industry folks converge under the skylight in the Sunshine Room, featuring bright yellow banquettes and a sight line to the open kitchen. And if a recent drop-in by Will Ferrell is any indication, celebrities beeline to Casper's Room in the back, adorned with equestrian paintings by artist Casper Abolik, whose portrait subjects have included A$AP Rocky and Madonna. Egged on by ashtrays, customers reclaiming their joie de vivre might even bum a cigarette out front. The host has been known to facilitate introductions. The restaurant, which opened last fall, may be in a school of retro-flavored newcomers, including Gigi's and Mother Wolf nearby. But Horses had a head start. For more than 70 years, 7617 Sunset Boulevard was home to Ye Coach and Horses, a British pub that counted Richard Burton and Alfred Hitchcock as patrons. Quentin Tarantino and Tim Roth supposedly scribbled ideas for Pulp Fiction on napkins there in the 90s. The next resident hotspot, the Pikey, shuttered in 2020. Co-chef and co-owner Liz Johnson, who runs Horses with her D.C.-born husband, Will Agajanian, visited the vacated space in the fall of 2020 when L.A. was in a very rough spot, she says. The duo hadn't planned to move to the city, but that first walkthrough was all it took. Johnson, 31, first won notice for her cooking in 2016, when the Schenectady, New York native was running the Kitchen at Mimi, a Manhattan bistro. She's got something any number of more experienced chefs don't, New York Times restaurant critic Pete Wells wrote at the time, a clear and personal vision of French food as a celebration of appetite, an occasion to eat with joy and lust. Johnson's ascent continued at the Jewish American comfort food spot Friedman's in Silver Lake, and with a stint alongside Agajanian at Nashville's The Catbird Seat, where they served modernist 20-course tasting menus. Horses, with nary a tweezed nasturtium in sight, marks a return to the joy and the lust. Tagliarini with clams, Cornish game hen, a very nice cheeseburger. The menu nods to a number of culinary traditions from the Bay Area to Venice, but think of the principle as Dan Tana's with better food, just not too much better. We'll do a ridiculously creamy Caesar, and we'll give you French fries and ketchup, says Johnson, who brought on Brittany Ha and Lee Palerino as fellow executive chefs. Milk in your bad coffee? We love it. One of the first considerations was whether the entire staff could drop everything in the middle of a service to sing Happy Birthday. They can, they do. They researched the atmospheres at Spago and Mr. Chow in Beverly Hills, and Michel Lamy's erstwhile Le Deux Café. A portrait of the Horses kitchen staff, clad in chef's whites, channels an iconic class portrait at Michael's Santa Monica, Yet another wink positioning horses among a lineage of laid-back California maximalism. People are getting the message. We just had somebody call to ask if they could bring their horses, Johnson says. I told them that we'd be happy to let the horses hang out in the courtyard next door and feed them carrots while their owners have dinner. Keziah Weir writes about books. Among the Ruins, a nuanced view of Vivien Leigh and Laurence Olivier's great love. This book is a study of passion, writes Stephen Galloway in Truly Madly, Vivien Leigh, Laurence Olivier, and the Romance of the Century, out from Grand Central. It's true that there's passion in spades, not to mention a cameo by Marilyn Monroe, glitzy dinners, and cinematic visits to the sets and stages of Antony and Cleopatra and Gone with the Wind. But Leigh and Olivier's affair, marriage, and eventual divorce is a complicated saga, inflected by Leigh's mental illness, which was widely dismissed and misunderstood. Nonsense, Noel Coward told Olivier when the actor raised concerns. While past depictions render Lee difficult and Olivier long-suffering, Galloway makes clear their symbiosis. Lee did her best to care for Larry, too, joining him as he filmed Henry V to assist and advise and encourage and relieve, even as her own health declined. Between the tabloid intrigue and the Shakespearean end is a compelling portrait of two people trying their best. Murder, he wrote, the story of William F. Buckley's most dangerous cause célèbre. First, Vicky. So begins Sarah Weinman's Scoundrel, how a convicted murderer persuaded the women who loved him, the conservative establishment, and the courts to set him free. Vicky was Victoria Zelinsky, the 15-year-old victim of Edgar Smith, who was sentenced to death for his crime. The killer went on to write two memoirs and a novel about the murder, insisting on his innocence. With the precision of an atom splicer, Scoundrel probes the psychological fallout for those in Smith's orbit, from the mourning Zelinsky family to Smith's editor at Knopf, whose correspondence veered quickly from professional to romantic, to conservative pundit William F. Buckley, instrumental in securing Smith's ill-advised release. In large part, Weinman tells Vanity Fair, because he felt that there was literary talent there. Only to have Smith attempt murder 5 years after getting out. The book grapples with capital punishment, racism, and intellectual bias. If you're telling a crime story now, it can't just be the crime story itself, says Weinman. Are there other deeper questions that you should be reckoning within? True crimes should enable you to do that. Six-pack satire to revival Animal Farm, dark escapades of youth, and more new fiction. Glory, with imaginative roots in the 2017 Zimbabwe coup, Noviel Bulawayo's vigorous satire takes place in a fictional African country peopled by phone-wielding, clothed, and revolution-minded animals after the fall of their leader, Old Horse. An Old Horse, published by Viking. The Swimmers. In what begins as a comedy, a mysterious crack appears in a community pool. A longtime swimmer's dementia progresses, and the swimmer's daughter, a writer, recalls her relationship with her ailing mother in Julio Tsuka's polyphonic, zigzagging narrative, published by Knopf. Peach Blossom Spring. A daughter searches for answers from a father unwilling to revisit his painful past. In this reimagination of author Melissa Fu's own family history, which spans such disparate locales as Hunan Province in 1938 to Texas in 1990. Published by Little Brown. Ocean State. In the first pages of this reversed psychological thriller, we learn that teenage Angel has killed a girl. Soon, there's little question as to whom and why. Love. In flashbacks, the suspense comes from peeling back the layers and Stuart Onan's immersive character studies, published by Grove Press. Checkout 19. We read in order to come to life, as Claire Louise Bennett's narrator tweaks Didion in this love letter to books. She discovers Sylvia Plath and Angela Carter, visits Lake Como because of E.M. Forster, and learns narrative can overcome some, but not all, violations. Published by Riverhead. The World Cannot Give. Tara Isabella Burton harnesses the fresh desire of teenagedom in this story of a boarding school on the coast of Maine. A charismatic, devout, and sexually ambiguous young choir member manipulates her acolytes to fatal ends. Published by Simon & Schuster. Now here's the Proust Questionnaire with an illustration by Risco. Kenneth Branagh, the writer and director of Belfast, on mind reading, movie snacks, and reincarnation as a Jack Russell Terrier. What is your idea of perfect happiness? Eating ice cream in the cinema, watching the trailers with the main film about to start. On what occasion do you lie when Tottenham Hotspur lose a football match, and I defend it as a wonderful opportunity to learn? Which living person do you most admire? Our local doctor. What or who is the greatest love of your life? My wife and literature. What is the trait you most deplore in yourself? Vacillation. What is the trait you most deplore in others? Time wasting. What is your greatest extravagance? Red wine from Northern Italy. What is your motto? Be early, be cheerful, say thank you. What is your greatest fear? Ignorance. Which historical figure do you most identify with? Doubting Thomas. What is your favorite journey? Home. What do you consider the most overrated virtue? Dignity. What do you dislike most about your appearance? No good disliking ourselves. Gives the world an excuse to do the same. Which word or phrase do you most overuse in the current state of knowledge? What is your greatest regret? Ever having regrets. When and where were you happiest? Here, now. Which talent would you most like to have? Mind reading. What is your current state of mind? Exercised. If you could change one thing about yourself, what would it be? Overthinking. Which living person do you most despise? I despise no one. Waste of energy. If you could change one thing about your family, what would it be? Make it massively bigger. What do you consider your greatest achievement? Decades of friendships. What is your most treasured possession? A sense of humor. What do you regard as the lowest depth of misery? Lovelessness. Where would you like to live? Anywhere happy. What is your favorite occupation? Reading. What is your most marked characteristic? Restlessness. What do you most value in your friends? Laughter. Who are your favorite writers? Shakespeare, Thomas Hardy, Emily Dickinson. What is it that you most dislike? Violence. How would you like to die? At peace. If you were to die and come back as a person or thing, what do you think it would be? A projectionist or a football player? Who is your favorite hero of fiction? Prince Mishkin in Dostoevsky's The Idiot. Who are your heroes in real life? The workers of our British National Health Service. What are your favorite names? Tyrone, Eustacia. If you could choose to come back as a person or thing, what would it be? A happy and healthy Jack Russell Terrier who learns how to cure cancer. And that was the Proust Questionnaire with Kenneth Branagh. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.